Yeah.
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
What?
Shaking.
What's shaking?
Shaking. Shaking like bacon.
Faster, let's do it.
This is episode 73 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Snap.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's a lot of episodes, right?
That is a lot.
Apparently.
My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And what do we say? You can subscribe on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook.
Yep.
You can go on our Twitter. What's going on Twitter?
Very little. It's a quiet week.
It is a quiet
week. Tweet at us, yo.
We did get a question from Twitter, so we'll be reading that in a little bit. And we got a Tumblr. Nick is supposed to be doing that, but he's not doing anything.
Nah.
But I posted something on there today, some art from a comic I'm working on.
I always forget about
it. You guys should check that out. Cadetscomic.tumblr.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. Featuring six children. And reviews on iTunes is something we like.
We do like that.
And we got some more. We got like 23 5-star reviews now.
How many 4-star reviews?
None.
How many no star reviews?
None.
Yeah.
Are we gonna read these reviews? A couple guys gave us some nice reviews.
Nice.
The first one's from Matt Lopez. He says, an amazing comics related podcast from the guys at my local comic shop, Big Planet Comics, in the DC metro area. I look forward to listening to this after I've picked up my haul for the week to see what they think on similar titles. Add in some great humor and sound effects, and you've got yourself a winner here.
Yeah.
You got yourself a recipe for podcast.
We should do some sound effects and be funny.
And then we've got another one. This is from Eli from Minnesota. So shout out to our Midwestern fans.
Yeah.
How's
that snow treating you?
Yeah. Get yourself a bag of milk. He says, these guys,
they're not Canadian.
I thought people don't use loonies in Minnesota.
Probably.
Oh, you bashed my shin.
It's probably illegal currency.
Yeah.
He says, these guys know comics. I have yet to be led astray by the titles they recommend. Unlike a lot of comic book podcasts, the hosts keep the audience in mind. A great listen for those new to comics.
Sweet.
Interesting.
Sweet. So if you're new to comics.
That's what we're going for.
And you're listening.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Talking about Drax the Destroyer.
We're going to do a big bit about a Hammer and Anvil, a classic comic from the 80s.
Yep.
And
talk about Big Barda.
Yep, do a Big Barda retrospective. Did you guys see that Argo art that just showed up on the internet?
Yeah,
the Kirby awesome
with just Ben Affleck?
Just pictures of Ben Affleck.
Yep.
That Jack Kirby drew when Ben Affleck was a baby. So Argo was based on
Lord of Light.
Yeah, which was like this
Roger Zelazny.
Yeah,
book.
This Roger Zelazny book. But then people know the movie. Basically, it was used as like a cover to get some people out of Iran, right?
Correct.
And
have you not seen Argo?
I haven't seen Argo.
Oh my god!
And Jack
you're
Kirby,
talking like you haven't seen this movie.
Is Jack Kirby in it? Like, is there a guy that's Jack Kirby in the movie?
I don't think they actually use him. They just say we've got this art on file from a previous movie.
Yeah, and
Joe Carby.
Yeah, he did all this production art for this fake movie that didn't actually get made. And it just all popped up online, and it's pretty amazing.
It's pretty rad.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's like the sort of stuff that you would see this in this film would never get made.
It's like something you would see in Jack Kirby comics.
Yeah, it's like the most ridiculous set design and costumes ever. It's like no human could pull these off.
So did they actually build some of that stuff?
Can
somebody just tell me the plot of Argo? Just tell me everything that happens in the movie.
I haven't seen it.
During the 1979 revolution by the Ayatollah Khomeini against the Shah of Iran, a group of protesters overrun the American embassy in Tehran and thereby take hostage all the workers at the embassy, save six people in the visa section who escape and hide out in the Canadian ambassador's residence. Then they need to be smuggled out of the country. How can you do that? Ben Affleck knows.
This dollar is staying in my pocket, Redbox. I don't even need you anymore.
But yeah, so they say, let's do a fake film and pretend all these Americans are actually part of our film crew. And then we just pretend that they came and now they're flying out with us.
Boom.
And so to do that, they say we need a terrible movie that's actually in production or almost was in production. So they found Argo or Lord of Light, which had art by Jack Kirby. So they had all these awesome like storyboards and stuff, which are nowhere as cool as the real Kirby stuff.
Awesome. I was just joking, but that's awesome. That was the entire
spoiler
plot.
Alert.
Most of it.
If you guys haven't seen Argo,
that's all the setup. I haven't even told you what happens.
A post spoiler alert.
Yeah, it got snubbed. Ben Affleck got snubbed. Snubs and flubs. So what have you guys been up to besides
Jack Kirby
preparing your Argo description?
I've been watching a lot of Lost.
Have you? Yeah. You're rewatching it?
Yeah.
Your girlfriend had not seen it. Is that what's going on?
Yeah. Are you feeling a lot of like anger when things happen? Or are you just keeping track of all the things they never explain?
Sort of. But then I'm like also like, oh,
really?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just awesome. To mess with her.
Yeah. No, but there's also definitely stuff where I'm like, oh, that pays off later. But I don't know.
How good?
She's like, what's going on with this? I'm like, oh, just watch.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just enjoy.
I tried to watch Battlestar Galactica again. There's so much talking on that show. I just want robots and explosions. And
that show, in retrospect, is not good.
The beginning's great.
The first season's pretty good.
Yeah, it was the first thing was like a mini series, right? And that was really cool.
And the second series season's okay. It just gets worse as it goes along.
Third season's terrible.
Is that the one with like the boxing stuff and
that's
like
the third season
and like the Christian Scientist thing, and then like the
now, the second one is mainly with the other ship showing up, and it's all the weird like crazy.
Oh, the Motorola Razor.
Well, so I was telling somebody that I was rewatching Lost, and they're like, he's like, oh, I was thinking about watching it because I've never seen it, but like I heard that like they don't there's it's like kind of confusing and there's not a lot of answers. He's like, but I think I'm just gonna watch X-Files. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, just watch Lost.
Just watch whatever. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing, Jared?
I was thinking nothing. No. Still haven't watched that Avatar Last Airbender. Spring shame.
The movie?
You should. We've been shaming people all this week because the new hardcover came out of all the promise books. Shaming people, telling them to watch Avatar. I believe you were one of the people we shamed.
I was the first one you shamed.
I only like the movie.
I'm wagging my finger at Jared right now.
Gosh, again.
Nick only likes the live action movie.
Did you hear they're making the sequel?
Are they live action? It's made a ton of money internationally.
Yeah, they're doing it. Because
nobody
one.
Knew any better.
It made like $400 million.
Oh, I saw a legit teaser image for M. Night Shyamalan's Airbender 2.
You would think they would get somebody else to do it at least.
No way. I mean, proven property, man. That guy can knock it out.
I guess so.
It made a lot of money in other countries. I guess because they couldn't tell like if the acting was bad.
Yeah.
That's what I feel sometimes when I'm watching foreign films. I'm like, this is pretty good, I think, but I can't tell if the acting's bad because I don't know like how their sentences are formed. And stuff.
Hey, well, if you can't tell, then you know you're enjoying Sold. It. Then it's good enough, right?
Yeah,
they got some really good dub voice actors.
God,
what have I been doing? I just wrote a script for a Big Planet ad on the back of the new Magic Bullet.
Sweet.
So that's gonna be a lot of fun.
Oh,
keep an eye out for that. Yeah, Nick and I, after the podcast tonight, are going to go write our scripts for our actual Magic Bullet comics that are due in like
coming up
10 days or something. Yeah. So, I guess that's about it. You guys want to do some news?
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
You got your news there, Nick? Let's do this.
Yeah, I got it. This just in, update from last week. Green Lantern, new writers. All right, so DC has announced the new creative teams for all the Green Lantern books since everybody's leaving after issue 20.
And these are actually pretty good choices, I feel like.
Some of them. First of all, Green Lantern, the regular series, will be written by Robert Venditti and Billy Tan.
And Robert Venditti did Surrogates is probably the thing.
And probably his best book.
Yeah.
But he writes something else that's not good right now, doesn't he?
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's done some other stuff. He's like, okay.
Well, there's Demon Knights. It's all right.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a weird choice. But I would actually rather prefer the people that are writing the other books to be writing Green Lantern. Because Green Lantern Corps is going to be written by Joshua Hale Fielkov and drawn by Bernard Chang.
And we love Joshua Hale Fielkov. He did the Origin of Skeletor He-Man comic.
It's true.
And he also did Alpha that came out this week, which I thought was pretty good.
And he does iVampire, which is great.
Spoiler for later in the podcast. Just turn it off. And shut it down.
What was the other thing that he did that was really good? He did Tumor, right?
Yeah, Tumor, which is amazing. Great crime story.
Yeah, and he's also writing Red Lanterns with Alessandro Vitti on art.
He's taking over writing Red Lanterns.
Yeah.
Wow, weird. It's a double.
He'll be doing it all.
And then the other person is Justin Jordan of Luther Strode is writing Green Lantern New Guardians.
Friend of the show.
Red Walker.
J.J. Justin Jordan.
Yeah, he was writing Team 7 and Deathstroke, but they both got canceled, so then they were like, here, write this.
Yeah, and not due to any fault of his. It's like, I feel
those
like they got canceled before his issues
canceled,
even came out.
Yeah. And Then they announced another, as if there weren't enough
many Green Lantern
books. There's only four Green Lantern books, but now there's a Larfleeze book.
What?
Which people have been clamoring for. Written by
Orange Lantern.
Keith Giffen and drawn by Scott Collins, who are the exact people that wrote the backups and Threshold with Larfleeze in them.
Which are not that
good. And those are not very good.
Yeah, not very good. Nah. But still, overall, I feel like this shakeup is all right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm interested to see where it goes.
Green Lantern had gotten away from me recently, so I'll be eager to jump back in and see what's going on.
I was actually kind of disappointed to hear that Red Lanterns and Larfleeze were things
that were still going to exist.
Yeah, because I thought that maybe this new Green Lantern crossover, like Wrath of the First Lantern or whatever, I think that was going to be John's thing where he like gets rid of all the other cores.
Oh, that would have been great.
And he's like, all we need is one core, the Green Lantern core. And then I thought that was going to be it, but nope. The Red Lanterns and Larfleeze still around.
Yes, you change it to Red Lantern. Just have one.
Red just Lantern. The cat.
Yeah.
Meow.
It's actually just going to be about lanterns.
It's just going to be about a bunch of red lanterns.
Yeah.
And their life from the lantern factory to a party.
To a dump.
And then to the dump. It's true.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Another thing, piece of news we got here today is Raina Telgemeier has announced this follow-up to Smile.
Sisters. I need applause on here.
Hello.
I still have this.
Hello.
Hello.
So if you don't know what Smile is, it's Raina Telgemeier's book about her when she was younger. And
getting braces.
Getting braces and stuff.
And it hit number one on the New York Times bestseller graphic novel list.
And so she said, you know, I guess do what I know best. And she's writing another book about her family and her relationship with her sister. So it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, should be good. Cool. Smile's great. Drama's great. This is going to be great.
It's going to be great.
great.
Another interesting piece of news that Jared will like to hear. Comic sales are back at the 1994 levels.
Lies.
Oh, and again, thanks to the Comics Beat.
Yep.
That's where I've been pulling all this news from.
Should be comicsbeat.com?
It's the Publishers Weekly Comics Beat. Yeah. Just look it up on Google. You'll find it.
It's got all the news.
Yeah.
But we tell you the exciting stuff.
That we steal our news from.
Yeah, so the comics are at the level that they were around 93, 94.
Yeah, they're back up. They said it's the comics market was about $700 million last year. And that's around the same as it was in 93, 94, which was when things were really at their height.
Right.
That was like when Image was getting going. And
and there are tons of covers and everyone's collecting stuff and saving, you know, buying 10 copies of number ones because they're idiots.
Yeah, it's and that's happening again.
Yeah, starting to get a little bad.
It's getting a little annoying. Peter Panzerfaust was a particular book that just got picked up
as a TV show
thing is definitely a big part of it.
Yeah.
Comics like Walking Dead and Thief of Thieves, which is going to be a TV show coming up. And that and now this Peter Panzerfaust.
Which honestly, I'm happier to do that than be like, here's a new title that they're printing 8 million of. You should buy 8 copies. I'd rather be like, here's a very small press comic that's good. It might get popular. Buy one.
Yeah, the speculators market just grosses me
out. Speculators are terrible. Yeah. I hate you. Speculators. I love all the podcast listeners unless you're a speculator. And I might.
It just sometimes drives me crazy when these people come out of nowhere. And
yeah,
like,
that's the worst.
This?
Yeah.
Why don't you have this?
Like it's gold.
Yeah.
They're like trying to claim jump.
Comics gold.
Claim jump people that just want to read comics.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Stealing all the gold. Show me where the gold at. Yeah, so that's it for news, right?
Yeah, that's about it.
I couldn't
think of anything else.
I don't know. I can't think of anything else.
Nah, good enough.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I got all this stuff earlier today. What do you want from me?
What do you want?
All right. So let's.
We need more reporting from the field.
We do.
Maybe our listeners should tell us news.
I don't even know what that means. Yeah. If you guys got news, send it in. Report from the field.
I'm going to go to DC Comics and be like, give me some news.
Give me some news. They're going to be like, keep giving on Larfleeze.
That'll be Larfleeze a hit already.
Yeah. All right. Let's do some viewer mail.
Okay.
All right. All right. First, we got a question from Twitter. As always, you can send your questions into Twitter at Big Planet Comics.
Yes, you can.
Hello.
It says, question for the podcast. What is the dental hygiene of most superheroes? I imagine Batman has really bad coffee breath.
Does Batman drink a lot of coffee?
I was thinking about it. I'm like, he should, but I'm sure he's like juiced up on some crazy like bat you know, bat drug or something.
Bat guano?
No,
Guapo?
Like bat Red Bull.
Batman doesn't do drugs.
Batman does not do drugs.
Yeah, he does.
Speaking of Batman.
Scarecrow.
He does Venom.
Did you guys see the pages that Tradmore put up that are going to be in Legends of the Dark Knight
number
8?
No.
Oh, my God. That guy drawing
like
Batman.
This guy should draw awesome things all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I guess he does draw awesome things all the time.
Friend
right?
of the
but
show.
He
Tradmore.
Should, friend of the show. Best friend. My best friend, Tradmore.
Our best friend.
Our best friend. Me and Jared's best friend.
Yeah, it's
not
me.
Nick's
Nick?
Best friend.
I don't know, man.
He is not friends with
you
Nick.
You just came across bad when we hang out.
Yeah. So what is the dental hygiene of most superheroes? So I guess he wants us to go through most superheroes one by one.
Killer Croc. Terrible.
Bad
teeth.
Sewer breath.
Well, I'm assuming Spider-Man and probably the people that have their faces covered up probably have some bad breath.
Ooh.
Because there's nowhere for it to go.
But at least you don't have to deal with it.
It's true. It's true.
I imagine...
Vermin?
I
not
imagine
good.
Superman... Does Superman eat food?
Oh, good question. He must. Otherwise, they'd be like, that Clark Kent, he's a peculiar one.
Does he eat rocks and stuff?
Well, I don't know. Can bacteria...
Good question.
Can bacteria even form on his tongue?
Oh, my God. This is the worst podcast ever. what if the thing had sex with Wonder Woman?
I would say that probably the one that has the best breath is probably Martian Manhunter. Because
it smells like Oreo cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's a shapeshifter, so he probably shifts all the bad breath part to somewhere else, other part of his body.
That just means he smells worse elsewhere. No, I think the best...
So his butt stinks? Like Oreo cookies?
Yeah.
I think the guy with the best breath is Captain America.
Just because he brushes
America
his like 6 times a day.
Yeah. With apples.
Stephanie Brown has breath like waffles.
Yep.
Because she eats waffles all the time.
true.
Yeah, I don't know. They, you know, they're probably just normal.
Wolverine got some beer breath.
Yep, Wolverine's got beer breath.
Oh, he smells like booze.
Yep.
And cigars, man. Yeah, Wolverine, not a pick.
Nick Fury, yeah, probably smells like cigars all the time. Yeah, I don't know.
Spider-Man smells like ramen noodles because he's broke. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
There you go.
Information
at our fingertips.
Right from our fingertips to your ears. Wet Willy of information. all right, so then we got another one. This is from Michael K.
This is a long one.
He says, hey guys, I just wanted to ask a few questions.
All right, we're ready.
He just wants to, so we should answer them. He says, first, I remember a few years ago hearing about a title called Batman Europa and got really excited, but over time it either kept getting delayed or it just got canceled before it ever came out. That was like it was going to be Jim
Brian
Lee,
Azzarello,
right?
Jim Lee and
it?
Brian Azzarello, yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, let's do New 52 instead.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. So it was like basically Jim Lee worked on the DC MMO game forever.
Right.
And then this was supposed to be his big return after that, but then they were like, hey, let's relaunch everything tomorrow.
How about you try to save our company instead?
And so he's just wondering if there are any comics that we were looking forward to but got canceled before we ever got a chance to read it, or any comics that are constantly delayed that you wish would stop getting delayed. One I can think of right away is there was a book called Captain America White that was supposed to come out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was sort of supposed to be like the next thing in the Spider-Man Blue, Hulk Gray, Daredevil Yellow.
Like origin stories by Loeb and...
And Tim Sale.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was excited to see that, but that just kind of... They did a number zero issue that was
like
a preview.
Cool. Yeah.
And then it just went away.
Hmm. There was a series called... God, what was it called? It was like Allies... It was something that... It was like a few years ago that was coming out, and it was about like...
Was it the Brubaker one, the 6 issue?
No, it was the one that was about like... Like a bunch of heroes from World War II.
Yeah.
That there was like some conspiracy that they couldn't figure out.
Well, they did like 6 issues and then never did the last 2.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Brubaker, though. It was somebody else.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was talking about the one that it was like Stefano Caselli on art.
Yeah.
And
who wrote that?
I can't remember
was
who
it
wrote
Young
it.
Allies? No, it wasn't Young Allies.
It was something like that.
It was like the team that was doing it ended up moving over to Captain America and Bucky, I think. But, yeah, I can't remember the name of that book, but I know what you're talking about. That sucked. That was a weird thing. I had never seen that before.
Me neither.
A
not
mini
from a
series
big publisher. Yeah.
That got canceled before.
It was a mini series, too.
Yeah, it was an 8-issue mini series.
And then published 6 and then didn't wrap it up at 6. They just never published 7 and 8.
Which is crazy because, like... It was really good.
It was
and
really
and it
good.
Had like a bunch of crazy twists that like I was like, I want to see what happens.
Yeah,
and
it wasn't like just like fun little stories. It was like a one big long story that just never finished.
And it was really depressing.
And they didn't put out a trade or anything. It just got canceled.
Yeah. That was definitely one.
Because they have done that a few times where they've done like a few issues or maybe just one issue and then did a trade to finish the whole thing. Just like, you got a sample, now here's the book.
And I would definitely like to see Orcstein come out on a regular basis.
He's got that Godzilla joint going on.
And Non-Player is another one that just has one issue.
Just kind of disappeared.
Also, I was really disappointed. We talked about this a couple episodes ago, or maybe just last week, that Seconds by Brian Lee O'Malley got delayed.
Right. Yeah.
And it was only for a short time, and it's back on schedule, but man, that delay for Saga killed me.
That 1 month off.
It was just a month off, yeah. but it was too That's much. True. I love that book. Yeah. The new issue Saga was so good, you guys.
That's true.
yeah. And then he's got another question. He says, second, I know this is a bit late, but when Sweet Tooth ended, I was a bit sad, being that it had a lot of sentimental value to me, being that it was a series I read from start to finish, one of the first comics I bought in general.
Hmm.
Amongst other examples, I can't remember. That's confusing to me, but I understand the sentiment. So this leads me to ask if there are any comics that you guys have sentimental value for. Thanks for reading this, and keep up the awesome podcast, Michael K.
Nice.
Yeah, so sentimental value, I mean, I guess it's not specifically things that ended. Just, you know, what do you guys got?
Like series that make me sad?
No, I think just that are like important to you.
Important to me?
Yeah.
I want to know what makes Nick sad in his comics.
What makes me sad? Why the Last Man? The end of Why the Last Man makes me sad.
This is not things that make you sad. It's things that have sentimental, like things that were important to you or like meant something to you at some point in your life.
Nick doesn't know what sentimental means. Now he does.
Come back to me.
Okay.
G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, the classic 1980s one, is one of the first comics I read as a kid, and it's still really good, but sadly not as great as I remember. Better than most people remember.
Cerebus was a big one for me, just because it kind of opened my eyes to how comics could be something besides Spider-Man.
I got a pretty good one. Anytime I read a Disney comic, because the first time I started reading Disney comics was in Greece, in my grandparents' house. I used to read it on their porch.
Awesome.
I was there like every summer. And yeah, their house is gone and they're dead. So it's very sad.
Jeez, Nick.
Hello. Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely a sentimental thing. Think about the good old days.
No, that's a great answer.
Well done, sir.
I'd be curious to know why Sweet Tooth was so important to this guy. But
well, like he said it was one of the few that like he started and finished. You know, it's like easy to like, oh, here's Sweet Tooth, there's 3 trades out, keep reading it, but like to start a series and then
have it wrap up. Yeah, for somebody who hasn't read like a lot of comics, like reading something from beginning to end.
And then actually have it end, yeah.
That's what I was saying too, yeah.
It's kind of rare.
Like it just impacts you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, because you're like, I read all of this.
And now it's done.
For like 5 years or 6 years or whatever, yeah.
So, well, if you guys have any comics that were of sentimental value to you, let us know on
Twitter.
Sell
them on eBay. Oh,
sell them on eBay. Sell your memories.
Sell your memories.
And if you guys have any other questions, you can send those to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, or you can leave a message on our podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAS. That is 1-703-539-CAS. T as in Terry and the Pirates.
Not confusing at all.
Not confusing at all. People are going to be like,
he is in Terry and the
Pirates.
They're
going to be like, 1-800 Terry and the Pirates.
Was it Harry? Call that right now.
And you can send questions to Twitter, Facebook, or you can just ask us in person and we'll write it down on a little piece of paper.
Whatever
and
works. And we love hearing from you, kids.
I might slide us a note.
Do I have anything in my pocket? I might. No, I think I just have a Gundam Wing trading card in my pocket.
No.
All right. So you guys want to do some reviews?
Yeah, yes.
All right, let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Nick, do you want to read this? You want to review this Shakira book that you were just looking at?
I guess it's called Shakara the Avenger, but I read it as Shakira the Avenger.
Her
most popular comic tie-in ever.
Hips of Justice.
From the makers of the... What's that?
Olympics.
The Jersey Shore comic.
No, oh, geez. The Situation comic. All right, so at first we've
There was a Situation comic?
There was a Situation
Somebody asked
comic.
For it.
Missing out.
Somebody was like, do you have the Situation comic? I was like, He's like, no, I want to get it as a joke. I was like...
if you want to copy the Situation comic, call our podcast hotline at 1-800-TERRY-AND-THE-PIRATES. all right, now up first this week we've got Alpha Big Time, number
Big Time.
One. Big Time, you guys. This is written by the aforementioned Joshua Hale Fiakoff, who's
we know
written,
that guy.
Yep, we talked about what he wrote before, but most notably Masters of the Universe, The Origin of Skeletor.
Yeah, which that's is probably what he's best known for.
I mean, on this podcast it is. And art by Nuno Plotti, who I don't know, but I thought this art was really good.
It was killer, bro.
It was killer. Yeah, so this follows Alpha, who was Spider-Man's sidekick in a storyline from about 10 issues ago or something like that.
Yeah.
And basically his storyline was he in an accident that was caused by Peter Parker that was in a way similar to the accident that made Peter Parker Spider-Man,
yeah,
was given superpowers, but he was entirely overpowered. He was basically an alpha level superhero, yeah, which is like one level above Omega, yeah, which was like the highest before that, right, or something, right, like that. And so he kind of went the wrong way, and
he was a jerk.
Yeah, he was a jerk, and they depowered him, and that's kind of where this starts out.
Yeah, this is a flip of the Peter Parker equation, where it's like when you got all these cool superpowers, you become a jerk instead of like trying to help people. Yeah.
So, but now Spider-Man is, spoiler alert, Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, sure, you can have your powers.
Yeah, he's like, sure, you can have your powers back. I think he just thinks it'll be an interesting thing to do.
Right.
He also tells him at one point, with great power comes great opportunity, which I think is really funny. Yeah. But, yeah, so this is just kind of about Alpha getting his powers back.
Like, it's pretty funny how it starts off. He's like, now he's like kind of like a loser, and like nobody likes him, and he sits at like the table with the weird kids, and like, he's like, oh shit, my powers again.
And of course, one of the weird kids is like a super hot, like emo
gothy
punk
chick.
Rock girl.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. He's like, I have to sit with these losers. I was like, yeah, that girl's really hot. What are you talking about?
Yeah. What are you talking about, bud? Yeah, so what did you guys think of this first issue?
It was fun.
It was blazing my eyes. I don't know what I'm saying. It was so good I couldn't describe it.
I toked up and got totally blazed.
totally
blazed it up.
Blazed up. It got my eyes high.
Well, I mean,
it was so good.
I can see what you're saying because the art is great and the coloring is really fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know who colored this, but I want to find out and mention it because it was very good.
Is Alpha from Detroit? Is that what it is?
I think, isn't he from New York?
Oh, wait, that's Vibe.
Yeah, that's Vibe. We will talk about that later, even though
they don't say who colored this.
I'm assuming it's Nuno Plotti if it just says artist.
Good for him.
But anyway, yeah, the colors in this are really vibrant and they really pop out.
Beautiful.
And it's got a really cool cartoony style that doesn't really look like much else that I've seen.
Yeah, like really thick lines and everybody's kind of bulky and exaggerated, which is really cool.
Really funny facial expressions.
Yeah, the facial expressions are great, and the action is really good. I mean, the little bit of it that there is.
Yeah.
And it's just like a fun, enjoyable comic. The dialogue's really sharp.
And a great ending that will lead to some crazy stuff in the next issue, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'm really liking the impact that the Dr. Octopus Spider-Man is having on things.
Yeah.
It's just anytime he shows up in anything, it's hilarious. And I feel like this gets the feel that book has down pretty well. It's like comedic, but there's a little bit of drama in it too. And I don't know, I enjoyed it.
It's good. If you like Superior Spider-Man, you should probably check this out. It's pretty much, I feel it's got a similar tone. It's kind of like lighthearted and fun, but like some crazy serious stuff, but...
Speaking of lighthearted and fun, our next book is Justice League of America number one.
What a hoot.
This is not a lighthearted book. This is by Jeff Johns, who's, of course, writes.
He's best known for his Avengers work in the late 90s.
With Gary Frank.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Jeff Johns is definitely best known for his run, his soon-to-end run on Green Lantern.
Flash.
His run on Flash.
Justice League?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, he currently writes Justice League.
He's currently writing Justice League.
Kind of a big book.
And, but not one of his best, I wouldn't say. But for me, his run on Teen Titans is probably the best thing that he's ever done.
That is great stuff.
It's really fantastic. But yeah, so now there's a sister book to Justice League, and it is Justice League of America.
One of the funny things, somebody came in and it was like, so there's two Justice League of America books? And I was like, well, the other team is just Justice League. He's like, I thought they were the Justice League of America. He's like, well, they used to be, but now they're just the Justice League of Earth or something. I don't know.
Now these guys are like the equivalent of what like Justice League International were back in the day, but not even because
they're not even all American.
Well, we'll talk about it. And by the way, the art in this is by David Finch, who I would say is best known for his run on New Avengers towards the beginning of New Avengers, like the Breakout and Century Stories. And Jared, why don't you tell people what Justice League of America is all about?
So the big problem is that like the Justice League with Superman and Batman and all that are not really answerable to anyone in the American government, which of course makes the American government twitchy. So they're like, let's make our own team just in case who can handle these guys, but also be like good American, you know, follow order type stuff.
Right. They want basically superhero soldiers.
Yep.
And the kickoff for this is that Superman and Wonder Woman are like making out, and they're like, uh-oh, like what happens if these guys like...
That I thought was the most interesting part of this. They said,
go crazy.
They said, one, you know, if these two people team up, could we stop them? And then the other twist is, if they break up and have a terrible fight, could we stop them? Like, good twist. And then the third thing, which I thought was great, is like, what if they have kids? Like, what? Right. And I was like, that's... Because that's never really handled in superhero comics, because right. The continuity is always like... currently always caught up.
I feel like it was handled in Clerks.
Also, didn't Superman have a kid just recently and that kid disappeared or something?
Oh, no, he literally disappeared.
Did he literally disappear?
I think he went into the Phantom Zone or whatever, or something like that.
But so, then mixed with that, there's a framing sequence from 5 years ago about supervillains getting together, but that's one page. Then you have the regular sequence where it's the guys working at the talkie-talkie part saying, like, here's the team, let's put them together. And then there's an action sequence where a villain is being hunted down to be killed.
Yeah, so
and you're kind of like, what's going on with that? This looks like the Justice League is going to kill this dude.
So at the core of this book is definitely, like, that's Amanda Waller, right? I've never recognized
her. Yeah, Amanda Waller.
She's
and
skinny now.
Trevor Steve or Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor.
And, yeah, Trevor Steve. Trevor Steve. Steve. Yeah, and basically, it's just Amanda Waller like manipulating Steve Trevor into being the guy that handles this team.
Right.
And he's really stupid. And anything that she says, he goes along with.
No, eventually, he's like, oh, this is unbelievable.
He's like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty mad about what
I'm saying. And so basically, yeah, they have a bunch of pictures of people, which is kind of like the thing that's been done like a million times. And then they're like, how about this guy? And then they talk about him. And then they show him.
You talking about the pictures that disappear and change from panel to panel?
No. And then they show him in different sequences. And then, yeah, I don't know.
Basically, this is a lot of getting the...
Putting the team together.
They're not even together by the end of this.
True.
The really cool part I liked about this, I thought, was the Martian Manhunter stuff. I thought that was pretty interesting.
That's true. That's cool.
Kevin really liked the drawing of Martian Manhunter.
He looks like a He-Man toy.
He looks pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that part. I like how he was like... he was like, sure, I'll... He's like, I'll watch it.
He's like, give me some Oreo cookies.
He's definitely more like... I feel like Martian Manhunter is more evil.
He's like more gritty and badass.
No, well, he's not even just that. He's just like, he's like a villain, basically, in these.
He seems more edgy and extreme to me.
Yeah, I'd say the same for Hawkman. I think Hawkman was pretty awesome in this.
Well, Hawkman's always been like
that's the best drawing in this. There's the big picture of Hawkman. But yeah, if our review of this comic seems like a mess right now, it's because this comic is a little bit of a mess, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's these three different things that are going on at three different times.
And the pacing on them is all different.
The pacing, yeah.
It cuts back and forth.
Some of the heroes are introduced in a certain way, and then they kind of don't follow that structure when they're introducing other ones. You know, they'll be talking, and then they'll finish with the word Hawkman or whatever, and it'll switch to a scene of Hawkman, and then the next one will just be like all of a sudden it switches scenes,
right.
And it's really weird. I don't know. It didn't really work for me. There's kind of a big reveal at the end that's supposed to be a mystery, but it seems really telegraphed from like the first appearance of this mysterious character or whatever. Yeah. And
also the cliffhanger seems disingenuous.
Yeah, it's the whole thing, and it's very serious.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem with this, is that it doesn't... There's absolutely no humor at any point in this, I don't think. If I don't remember.
There are things that they consider humor that just aren't to me. Like, I think it's supposed to be funny when he calls Katana Miss Slice and Dice.
Oh.
But...
oh.
Hello.
Yeah, but overall, none of that really... worked for me very well.
Yeah,
I will say David Finch, his art creates a good atmosphere, but also at the same time, I think it tends to be very stiff.
Yeah, it's definitely a little stiff.
His lighting's really good on some of this stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. That's about it.
Yeah,
I will say I think it's disgusting that they gave Star Spangled Kid, who's basically this little teenage
Star Girl,
right. Or Star Girl. Yeah, they gave her like the biggest boobs in the world, and it's really gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's me. What do you guys think?
I didn't dislike it as much as you, but it's definitely got some problems. I like the concept. I like that the fact that they're like putting together a team to take down the Justice League. The Justice League gets out of line. That's kind of
honestly though, like
a neat concept.
They have a page where they show them like the big screen of Justice League, and then like their team that's gonna like match up one on one with these characters. And everyone I looked at, I'm like, no, Justice League wins. No way. No.
And also some of them were just very like, some of them made sense because it was like, oh, I can see how this person affects this person's life. But then it's like Hawkman and Aquaman. I'm like, is it because he's like in the water and he's in the sky?
Well,
like,
they're both aliens from another race.
Aquaman's an alien?
Well, he's a not human.
Whatever.
Yeah, what?
They're both not human.
Yeah, but you know.
So I feel like a lot of this, the second issues where you'll see what this book's doing, and just this was not a good enough issue to keep some people around for issues.
But maybe this is one where we should definitely talk about second issue. It's a big book. I don't want to write it off immediately. You know, it's
no,
just
like
the
said,
tone of
parts
it is,
of it. And
is
it was a good setup for it. It's just uneven.
I thought the best character in this was Vibe.
Really?
No, I'm just trying to make a segue.
You're just trying to get away from this book. Well, there's one thing we should mention. We should mention the covers.
Should we?
Yeah, I mean it's
so
it's
52
it's
covers.
Yeah.
So there's a gimmick,
one for each of the 52 states.
Yep. Yeah. It's the 50 states and then Puerto Rico and then and DC
and Guam. Yep. Is Guam in there?
No,
I don't think Guam's in there.
Did not make
I don't
the cut.
Think the Virgin Islands are in there.
Nope.
Guys,
Philippines.
Yeah.
Nope.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what there is to say about it. I just thought it was it's a thing.
Interesting
about this.
Gimmick.
Yeah. All right. So up next, we've got another Justice League of America.
Speaking
book.
Of Vibe.
Yeah. Speaking of the vibe of this book. Speaking of Vibe that Nick said before. Anyway, this is Justice League of America Vibe. He's one of the characters in the new Justice League.
Yeah.
And this is written by Jeff Johns and co-written by Andrew Kreisberg,
who writes. Your favorite show?
Does he write Arrow?
Yeah,
that's a great, great show, you guys. And art by Pete Woods, who
does not draw well in this issue.
It's
I love
Pete I Woods like Pete Woods a lot. He did the much maligned Amazon's Attack storyline, which I thought had really great art. Actually,
yeah, it's weird in this. It seems really rushed and.
Yeah, usually his stuff is really detailed. He's sort of like, I would say, like the DC version of somebody like Steve McNiven. I would say he's comparable to usually.
No, not as detailed, but yeah.
But it's got it. But he has like a. There's just something about his stuff that usually looks really great. And I feel like the art in this is not bad, but it's maybe not up to his regular standard.
Yeah.
But Nick, why don't you tell people about Justice League of America Vibe?
Vibe is a character from the 80s who.
He was a Justice League Detroit character.
He was from Detroit. He was a breakdancer.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Literally someone came in today and it's like, I'm here for the Justice League Ricky Martin comic.
he could get jiggy with it, and his powers were like related to his dancing, and he would vibrate or something.
Is this all true?
Yeah, mostly.
Oh,
he also is one of the only Justice League characters that died on duty, I think. That's what I read. This is from Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, the Star Wars Wikipedia.
Yeah.
They're branching out.
And then he also came back to life twice.
It also says here that Chewbacca was killed by a planet.
He was last seen as a Black Lantern in the background of one of the comics.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Did you read all this today?
Yeah. I was like, who's Vibe? Let me get down to the heart of Vibe.
So how is he alive? I'm confused.
Basically, this is the new 52, Kevin.
I know, but didn't the Black Lantern stuff still happen?
Same.
No, it did, but like Vibe wasn't one of them.
Oh, okay.
Don't you remember that part was retcon?
Well, because the beginning of Batman Inc. happened too, but spoiler doesn't exist anymore. Like, what's her name?
Yeah, that's true.
Because she was in that, right? She was in that a lot. Anyway. So Vibe. Yeah, he's.
So what happens in this comic? Not who is Vibe.
Vibe is a character who...
It was Justice League.
Okay,
right?
So Vibe's brother is killed by one of the parademons during Apocalypse Attack from Justice League number 1. And during that attack...
Oh yeah, by the way, this also starts 5 years ago.
Yeah, during that attack... What is his name? I keep just calling him Vibe.
Ricky Martin.
Yeah, Ricky Martin gets caught in the boom tube explosion or whatever, and he gets out of sync with reality, and so he can see other beings and other frequencies and stuff like that. These powers are kind of vague in this. They kind of go to some lengths to describe him, but I still felt like I didn't understand exactly what he did.
It seems like he just has vibration powers.
Yeah, like
he's
he
like kind
vibrate.
Of a cross between what the Flash can do sometimes.
But he can see stuff on other frequencies.
Like, yeah, he can see into other dimensions.
And signals and stuff like that.
They actually say that in the other Justice League of America comic that came out this week.
Yeah, and so this is about him trying to get revenge for the death of his brother. He gets recruited by Amanda Waller. For Justice League of America, and she's like, I want you to join this team. And he's like, cool, I'll do it. And then there's like a twist at the end.
But see, that's the part that bugged me the most, because he's not directly recruited by Amanda Waller. Just some dude from a secret agency rolls up in his secret agency car, says, "Get in. We can, you know, your brother was killed 5 years ago. Let's go get revenge for him." And then shows up like, "Look, there's the thing that killed your brother. Go fight him." And I'm like, this is the most irresponsible, poorly planned, like throwing some, you know, untrained kid against something that clearly can kill people. And it's just, I don't know. That right there, I was like, this agency doesn't really know what they're doing.
Yeah, I didn't love this issue. I didn't think it was terrible, but I think the best part was kind of the ending.
Also, there's a part where they go to a place and, like, you can buy four burgers for $2.95. That seems very unrealistic to me.
Well, Kevin, don't forget that comparing the DC Earth to Marvel Earth, DC's Earth is always better.
It's true, yeah.
Because, man, that's a good price for a burger.
Yeah, so, yeah, I couldn't really get into this. And Pete Wood's art is, do you think it's bad in this? I think it's just not up to his regular standard.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, but it's not great. But it's got... I don't know. It's very much in the what seems to be the current DC house style.
Yeah,
everything's very muted, and
I also cannot believe that this is a regular ongoing.
Is this an ongoing?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I don't understand.
For at least 8 issues.
I feel like this is definitely something that's better suited as a miniseries.
Yeah,
I felt like that way about Katana too. But
I would have much rather see. Do you guys remember the Ray?
Yeah. Well, he came back for a little while, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he would have been... That was like a well-written first issue. That was part of the New 52, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like a miniseries that came out right after it started.
Yeah.
It's weird the stuff that they think is good enough for a series like this, and then the stuff like that, which I thought was fun, well-written, and, you know, he had a pretty good personality.
I feel like there's a lot of reasons the Vibe is a series, though, because he's a member of the Justice League of America now, and they want to try to push him, and also, like... They've gotten some slack.
But they didn't
give
Cyborg a series.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. They've gotten slack for stuff like that because they don't have like a diverse lineup of characters, and a lot of their like diverse characters' titles have been canceled. So they're like, you know, trying to push him. But it's weird. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a weird reason to make a comic. But I feel like that's like a lot of what went into their like decisions there.
Yeah, so that's Justice League of America Vibe number one. I feel like that brought us down a little bit.
Yeah, it
did.
So
lost some energy.
Let's go into something fun. I'm gonna skip the next one and then we'll come back to it. So let's do Merman Volume 1.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Out of Water hardcover. This is by Joey Weiser, who did. I should have written this down.
No, it was in the back of the thing. I forget what it was.
He's probably done a lot of things, but
he did a thing with Top Shelf that was pretty cool.
Ad House, Ride Home.
Oh yeah, Ride Home.
Ride Home.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also been in Flight.
There you go. And this is a kid's book about a merman named Merman.
So this is the most adorable, fun thing ever. So it starts with a group of kids, like normal human kids, at the beach, and when this weird little merman boy comes walking out of the water, who is very excited to, for the first time in his life, be on land. He looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon if he was green and cute and kind of, I don't know, naive and innocent. Yep. And quickly hijinks ensue. He says, "I don't want to go back into the water. I want to hang out with you guys," and quickly gets taken home and enrolled in school with the kids. It's like one of those, like,
fish out of water.
Out of water. I couldn't do it.
I saw it coming.
It's terrible.
It's definitely a fish out of water story.
But then the twist is, as soon as he's there at the beach, a shark comes swimming by and says, "Oh, Merman, there you are. You need to come back." And he refuses. So clearly there's things going on.
Yeah. The thing I liked about this is there's a... first of all, it's really funny. When he goes to school, somebody's like, "You should take a bath. You smell like fish." And he's like, "Oh, I don't want to take a bath."
Because he's scared of water.
Because he's scared of water. Right. But then when you find out why he's scared of water, it's one of the funniest scenes ever. It's so great.
Yeah, and it's it kind of starts out with a lot of gags, but then I feel like they start to build up more of the story.
Yeah, there's a little bit. There's some interesting mysteries, like where he came from and why he left. And there's people looking for him. It's pretty cool. I liked it a lot. It's a little bit like a, I would say it's kind of like a junior Aquaman book. Little kid Aquaman.
I'd say this is kind of like...
you talk to fish and stuff. And
that's true. I'd say, like, for people who love Fangbone, I think this is a good kind of follow-up book.
Also reminded me a lot of the Dalen and Goal book that we read a few weeks ago.
Because it's got fish in it.
But, it was just, like, it's a lot of fun. What age would you say this is for? Probably anywhere from, like 7 or so... up to, you know,
yeah,
70.
I'd say even
from 7 to 77.
5, 6, 7,
yeah. 78.
All ages.
Don't like it.
78-year-olds would hate this, and 4-year-olds would hate it. But it's definitely an all-ages book. It's a lot of fun. The art is extremely colorful.
It's great.
Yeah, sort of in the vein of guys like Chris Eliopoulos or, you know, a lot of the kid stuff that's going on right now. But, it's just... It's really fun, really funny.
And let me just say, some other characters show up later that I don't want to tell you who they are, but they're amazing. Like, the best designs, like... I'm laughing just looking at them.
There's some great character design in this.
And as we are doing now, don't forget, we will have samples of all the art up for all the books we're reviewing at bigplanetcomics.com, so you guys can see how awesome this stuff looks.
It's true. And, that's about it for Merman. I don't know. I'm like, my mind is melting right now.
Go get it.
Yeah, our highest recommendation. That's what I was trying to think.
There you go.
All right. Up next, we've got a new, the first volume of a new graphic novel series.
A manga,
which just means comics.
English. J-Rock.
This is by Tsutomu Nihei. It's called Knights of Sidonia. People might know his stuff. He did by Omega, and he also did...
Blame?
He also did Blame. Yeah.
And Sidonia is the Greek word for sheets.
Knight of the Sheets.
Really?
Yes.
So this is a book about the Ku Klux Klan.
All right. This put a lot more connotations on the series.
But I would say in order of, like... how confusing they are.
Yeah.
Biomega is the least confusing, and then Blame is the next least confusing, and then Knights of Sidonia is the most confusing.
Yeah. I like this book a lot, but it was definitely a little hard to follow at times.
There are definitely jumps, and you're not sure if it's just... I have a lot of problem with some Japanese stuff where it's just like it's such a popular like medium over there that there's just assumptions made. It's like if someone's nose is bleeding, clearly they're embarrassed. You know, it's just like every comic has done this for 50 years. And so there's a lot of stuff like that.
Nothing wrong with that. Like a shared language.
But
for some people, it's really hard.
Yeah. And this, it feels more like they're just jumps or.
I feel part of the problem is the
panels.
The art is good, but I feel like sometimes the storytelling is not clear.
Yeah.
What is happening now? Is this person being attacked?
I think there's a weird specific thing about the art, and it's that almost all of it is a little too close up.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get context. Yeah. But Jared, do you want to try to describe the story?
All right.
I can describe the beginning.
The solar
system has been wiped out.
This is good background, yes.
And it's been that happened like something like 10 years ago
by these giant beings.
These giant creatures and so basically the rest of humanity are riding around on this big ship
trying to find a new planet.
And that way it's very similar to Makuros.
Makuros.
So
obviously Kevin's a little predisposed to like this one.
Yeah, I like anything with people in space flying mechs and stuff. But anyway,
indeed, because they're mechs. The main character is a young kid named Nagate Tanakazi, who at the very beginning he's been living in some weird abandoned part of the spaceship with his grandfather, who has finally died, and so he goes off on his own and comes into the rest of the spaceship where all of humanity's been living without him.
It's weird. They have like villages and stuff inside of the spaceship.
The spaceship is artificial gigantic. Light, right? Yeah, it's like they basically have built a whole world in this huge, huge spaceship.
It took me a little while to figure that out because it's a little confusing.
It's kind of a sci-fi trope, but yeah, again, not explained very well. And in his spare time, when he's living with his grandfather in the wreckage of the secret, you know, like service tunnels of the spaceship, he's been training on old, you know, mech battlesuit stuff because the aliens are after humanity. And did they say the aliens destroyed Earth? Was that
they destroyed the entire solar system?
Right. So it's this weird kind of amorphous mutating blob alien that if you come close to it will basically eat you and rip you to shreds.
It's actually kind of terrifying.
They're really creepy.
Another trope of Japanese things.
Yeah.
They have tentacles inside of tentacles, and then they explode and release more tentacles.
So people do have battle suits, like giant mech robots that they can fly around inside of.
They're sort of humanoid looking, but...
That sort of help fight these aliens off, but are also sort of ineffective against them, so it's more like a delaying tactic. But once this kid...
I thought that was the weirdest thing. The way they have to kill these aliens is by, like, destroying their, like... like immune system, or was it like their uterus or something? I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, like splits them off into bits. It's super weird, super creepy monsters. Yeah. And then it's just this kind of outsider kid who's never had contact with any other humans except his grandfather, trying to get into the society where he's this weird reject outcast kid, except he's really talented at flying these things.
But yeah, it's pretty cool overall. There's a couple of really funny parts in it.
Yeah.
There's at least one really funny part where he's like, they're scared that gravity might turn off or whatever, so they have like these hooks that they attach to little poles on the wall.
The training sequence how to use your safety belt.
And he accidentally ends up in like the girl's locker room, and
they slap him
around, and like it's so funny because like
it's so Japanese.
He gets hit, and then he's dangling,
and
his head hits
balance, and he's like, yeah,
his head hits the wall.
Just hanging up. Yeah, he's hanging from his safety belt upside down.
It's pretty funny. But yeah, overall, I mean, you know, it is very weird, and it can be hard to follow at times, but and
it's pretty rad overall.
Yeah, I think the art's actually really good.
The art's great. It's just has problems telling the story.
And I think a lot of it is that like there are a lot of close-ups, and it can be hard to get context, especially because in a lot of the scenes are in like zero gravity. So things are like floating around upside down. Right. And I don't know, it can be really confusing sometimes. But
and then it'll cut to a shot of the spaceship from like miles away, which is amazing, and then it'll cut. And then it'll be another page where it's like these giant, horrible alien ripping people to shreds, or mech battle suits flying into battle.
Or they'll cut three times in like one page.
Right.
And it can be very jarring. But overall, I mean, I actually really liked this book a lot.
Yeah. So I'd say, again, we do this sometimes with books that we love, that we point out the flaws because it's something to talk, you know, it's just compelling to talk about these. But this was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I think it might require a little bit of, like, it's a little easier if you've read Japanese comics before, maybe, or if you do have an interest in stuff like Neon Genesis Evangelion, or like Fooly Cooly, or Macross, or any of that kind of giant robot stuff, which I love all that stuff. So for me, it's pretty awesome. But yeah, that's Knights of Cydonia, I would say, our weirdest recommendation.
Indeed.
All right, so we've got just a couple more books this week. Up next, we've got Nova Number 1. This is by Jeff Loeb, who seems to be back in his game with this, in
Nova,
my opinion.
In Spanish for no go.
That's
why the Chevy Nova really did not sell it. It's actually true. It didn't sell very well in South America.
And this is art by Ed McGuinness, who has worked with Jeff Loeb a lot in the past.
Yes.
What is Ed McGuinness most famous for? Probably doing
Superman?
He did Deadpool back in the day. That was like his big thing.
The beginning of the Red Hulk stuff, he did that.
Yeah.
And the Superman Batman thing was a pretty big thing. Yeah, so this is about Nova.
Nova?
Yeah, this is about Nova, but it's mostly about the new Nova.
It's another fish out of water tale.
It is definitely a fish out of water. So this is about Sam, who is the son of the sort of classic Nova.
But not Richard Rider.
Yeah, like the other, there's, I don't know, it's, yeah, this.
That's the one thing, I mean, it's confusing if you know anything about Nova, but if you don't know anything about Nova, it's like not confusing at all.
Yeah, I guess Richard Rider was a gold Nova, and this guy's dad was a black Nova.
Are those different things?
Yeah,
I've never
heard of those.
They say they're different things in this
comic.
Oh,
do they? I don't remember that.
Yeah, so the structure of this comic is a little strange, but I actually thought it worked pretty well. Basically, it's this framing story about this kid Sam, and his dad is a janitor at his high school.
Yeah.
And he kind of
like an alcoholic.
Janitor. Yeah, he's kind of like an alcoholic, and he doesn't do his job, and because of that, this kid is kind of constantly picked on by bullies at school, and people hate him, and God, the principal of the school is like a real jerk. Yeah. Like, he's almost worse than any of the other kids. And
his dad's just telling him these stories about being Nova.
Yeah, telling him these stories and telling
and
his little sister these stories. And his sister thinks that they're real, but he thinks that it's all just a bunch of bunk. And he thinks that his dad is, you know, living in the clouds, basically.
Right. But the one thing that's weird about that whole part of it, like, he doesn't believe his dad that all these things exist, like Rocket Raccoon and stuff. But, like, it just takes place in the Marvel Universe, so it's like superheroes and aliens all over the place.
Yeah, but then there's also your alcoholic janitor dad.
Yeah.
You know, who just has weird stories.
I thought it was a little weird that he was like, I couldn't believe that any of this stuff would exist.
Well, it's like if your dad was saved the president from getting shot or something like that.
I was Superman.
Even if you live in a, you're not going to believe your dad's like Chuck Norris or whatever.
Right.
If he's a janitor at your school. But So that's kind of it. It's very much him not understanding what's happening. And then, of course, it's all real because it is the Marvel Universe, and we all know that Rocket Raccoon's a real dude.
I feel like the thing that makes this really good is that it does the stuff that the Green Lantern movie should have done, where it's like the character doesn't know anything about this stuff, and he's kind of like thrown into it. He's like shot into space, and he's like, wow. He's like, what? Like, it's like, you know, it's got that sense of wonder where he's... I like the thing that I didn't like about Green Lantern movie is like, there's a million things I don't
like. Yeah, yeah. But I know what you mean. It's got that sort of Steven Spielberg thing going on where you ground it in something very relatable.
Right.
And you have a character who doesn't know about this universe. And because you're introducing it to them and they're a character that you can relate to, it makes it very easy for the reader to sort of buy into the story and be interested in what's going on. And I think actually Jeff Loeb does that really well in this. And the last page of this comic is really
awesome.
Really, really funny.
Yeah, this is probably the best thing Jeff Loeb's written in a very long
time. In a very long time.
A lot of good characters in this. There's like the cute girl at school. There's like the bully. There's like his little sister. There's these awesome flashbacks to Nova's adventures that are all full of crazy
Nova
action
adventures
and stuff.
Are awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the designs for all the different Nova characters, like the forearms.
Because they're all crazy
like
aliens.
Hairy dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should talk about McGinnis's art in this. This
is his best art ever.
It's the best art he's ever done. In a way, he takes it down a notch a little bit. Some of his cartoony stuff a little bit.
It's
like,
more cartoony, but at the same time, less.
But it's cartoony in a different way. It's like not everybody has giant hands and giant feet and giant muscles. There's like one dude in here who does, but he looks really awesome, so it's fine.
It's more balanced, yeah.
But like all the stuff that takes place on Earth seems a lot more grounded than the stuff that he's drawn before. It seems to be a little similar to somebody like Art Adams.
Yeah.
Which is a really good thing,
yeah,
I think.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, I really do think it's the best thing that McGinnis has ever drawn. He's great with with facial expressions, which is good for this story because it's, you know, for a first issue, it gets pretty emotional and you actually care about these characters pretty quickly, or at least I did. Yeah.
And there seems to be a distinct change in the art too between the like the real world stuff and then like the space stuff.
Yeah.
Space stuff seems to have like thicker lines and a lot brighter colors and
I think it makes
and a lot more manic like panels, shifts and layouts.
And a lot
and
more
stuff.
Exaggerated features.
And I think because of that it makes things, you know, less confusing. I mean, jumping around between flashbacks and things is something that happens in comics a lot.
Right,
I think a lot more now than maybe it ever has.
Yeah.
But in this book it doesn't feel jarring at all because it's all framed with these stories that he's telling. Okay. I thought this was a really well executed, well written, well drawn comic. It was actually like one of the best of the Marvel Now books. I was excited about it, and I was I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, I had problems with the beginning of it. Like I felt like the shifts between stories and stuff were a little too dry.
Yeah, I had a little trouble figuring out what was going on at the very beginning.
Exactly. But just flipping back through it right now, it's like, oh yeah, this is awesome.
I think it jumps right into a story as opposed to having like a page before that or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the previously is pretty funny. It's just like previously
empty space.
Overall I think everybody likes it.
Great.
And we would
get
all...
it and reread it, then you'll love it.
just read it twice.
This Nova does go.
Indeed.
For all our Hispanic listeners out there.
All right, so we got one more book this week. This is a self-published comic by Cody Pickrott. This is called Reptile Museum.
It's true.
And it's
the weird.
Yeah, yeah. He writes and draws it. It's a strange book. It's kind of takes place in a post-apocalyptic world. Nick, why
does
don't
it?
You, yeah, it does. It definitely does.
Or does it?
No, it definitely does. Why don't you tell people what this was about?
Clearly, I don't know. No, it's hard to say what it's about because it's very like it's slow, like deliberately slowly paced.
Reveal a lot.
It starts off with these guys kind of dismantling these bombs that have been planted by some people who outside their, you know, town or whatever, and they're not sure what's going on, like these people that live in the wilderness. And then one of their old friends shows up, and he's been out in the wilderness for a long time, and he's been through some stuff.
He's definitely been through some stuff.
And I mean, that's pretty much the basic gist of it. It's very short. The weird thing is it's like it's really good, but there's not a lot I feel like to say about it.
Yeah, it's like compelling. Like I'm curious about all the stuff that happens to these people, but it's definitely a lot hidden that's slowly being revealed.
Yeah, there's some cool like little hints at like the world and what's going on. And
I think that's actually what's really interesting about it. It's you know, these guys are just like they're basically laborers, but the world that they exist in is you know, even from the first couple pages where you see this these bombs that are hanging on these telephone wires, and you're like, well, what's that all about? And I like that
they live in this like fortified house museum.
Yeah, it's very
dangerous
much
dangerous things immediately past the fence. And
it's very like show don't tell.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're talking about this bomb the way that you just would if it was just part of your...
The aliens have left another bomb on the fence from their super explosive.
I think in that way it's maybe more elegant storytelling than you get in like a lot of things
definitely.
That come out. There's not like a ton of exposition. They just kind of throw you in or he does. It's just one guy that did this, but I think because of that, it just works really well for me. I'm like really curious about this world, which seems to be sort of. I got most of the description from the back page, which is kind of a description of the series.
Yeah,
but it says basically that it's there was an apocalypse and it's sort of come and gone, and these people have been isolated for a long time, and there's just a bunch of different crazy stuff going on, and there's a really cool fight scene in the end as well. Which I thought was pretty awesome. And the art is interesting. I don't know. Like, some of his faces can be like a little inconsistent at times, and some of his anatomy and stuff. But I think
and then other times they're awesome. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I think inconsistent. Like, sometimes they're really good.
Yeah, I think it's inconsistent. But his page layouts are really interesting, and like he doesn't use a lot of panels, but everything flows really well.
Doesn't use a lot of panel borders.
Like, yeah.
Just a lot of images on the page, but still get a good flow of information and
yeah, I think in ways almost like a better flow. He definitely knows like how to lead an eye around the page, which I think is a cool thing.
Yeah, there's like one scene where a guy's looking down through a hatch and Pants, the character who's come back from the wilderness, is like taking off his shirt, and you see how scarred he is from the wilderness, and it just is a zoom in on the panel looking through the secret trap door, and it's amazing.
Yeah. So I think it's a weird book. It's hard to describe, and it's like there's the dialogue is fairly sparse, so it's to talk about too much of it maybe gives a bit away. But I think it was an interesting first issue, and we'll probably talk about the second issue pretty soon.
Yeah,
and I would recommend that people check this out. It's called Reptile Museum.
There you go.
And that's it for this episode 73 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, you guys should check out. We're gonna have a new podcast picture up this week with a Western theme.
What?
Sci-fi theme last time. Yeah, I think we're gonna be doing one like every two episodes now. So that's gonna be pretty
mixing
fun.
Mixing it up.
Yep. Awesome. And we will see you guys next time.
Later.
Later.